going to start out this afternoon with Senator Lynch, Senate file number 176. Going to give us a description of the bill, but then it'll have to be forwarded on to there's an appropriation of looks like $15 million a year for 2 years. So with that, so after we hear about the legislation, we will forward it on to Senator Tomasoni's committee. So welcome to the committee, Senator Lynch, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Metz and members. It's a real pleasure for me to be here visiting your committee today. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Foundation Biotechnology and Medical Genomics Research Partnership.
Okay.
Simply put, we're here today to talk about cures and jobs. Today you're going to hear some details of the partnership, and you will see that this investment produces powerful research to improve life and to truly stimulate Minnesota's economy. Specifically, I ask your full support of Senate File 176, which provides $15 million of recurring funding to support Minnesota's long-term commitment to this powerful economic engine. I'm pleased to have with me today two individuals who will speak in greater detail about this partnership and some of the exciting things that have already been produced from its work. Immediately to my left, I have Dr. Wieben from the Mayo Foundation, and Dr. Paller joins me as well today. So with that, I will ask them to provide you with some more details.
Welcome to the Minnesota Senate, and identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dr. Eric Wieben. I'm the Mayo Project Director for the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics, and I'm also Director of Genomics Research Center at the Mayo Clinic. I'm here today to start a brief introduction to what we've been doing on behalf of the Minnesota Partnership for the last several years, and really the summary of a lot of what this partnership is about is shown on this first slide, which is bringing together the expertise of two Minnesota leaders to the benefit of all Minnesotans. And this really has been a productive partnership that, as Senator Lynch was saying, has had some implications already, both in terms of cures and jobs. So the concept of a functional research partnership between Mayo and the University of Minnesota with state support became a reality in 2003 with the recognition that bioscience was an area of opportunity for the state of Minnesota, and particularly if we could bring these two organizations together to work jointly on these problems, that we could have a real impact on the national bioscience scene. There's a limited window of opportunity because a lot of other states are doing this. We could do more together than either of us could do alone. There are great complementary strengths of these two institutions that, with state support, offer great potential. And because of previous investments within the state by our two organizations, and with over 50 years of experience and commitment to the bioscience industry, beginning with the medical device industry, that there was real opportunity here. And the other thing we realized is that really our strengths were synergistic, and it wasn't just taking two like institutions and having them work together, but we had complementary strengths.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Paller. I'm the Assistant Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota and also the co-director of the partnership. When we came together for this partnership, we set a number of goals for ourselves, and they reflect around the health of the Minnesota and Minnesota's economy. In terms of health, the work that we're doing will advance treatments for common diseases and illness. We'll enhance our shared technologies and be able to develop them more quickly and more effectively. It'll allow us to recruit top scientists to Minnesota, and it'll allow us to speed our discoveries to patients. How that reflects on Minnesota's economy is that the research itself brings more National Institutes of Health funds to the state, And as we know from the U.S. Department of Commerce, every $1 million in NIH money supports about 30 jobs. It helps create jobs directly and indirectly by any spinoffs. All of these jobs are high-paying, quality jobs, expands the tax base, and we expect that some of our discoveries will result in the formation of dynamic new businesses. And equally important, all of this work helps to focus attention on Minnesota and elevates our status as a worldwide destination for medical care. Just a quick refresher as to where we've been and where we're going. The state and the institutions have already made considerable investments. In 2004, we had a $2 million allocation from the state, which was matched by $1 million from each of the partners, the university and Mayo Clinic. So we had $4 million, and we funded a number of research projects, which we'll come back to in a minute. Then the last biennium, not only did we get bonding for a research facility in Rochester, which was completed and opened last month, but we also had a $15 million appropriation in the first year of the biennium, and we were fortunate enough to come back last year and get the full request funded so that we had $15 million each year in the last biennium. And we'll tell you what we've done with that money. But most important, we're here today because we've established a fair amount of momentum, and we don't want to lose that momentum, and we want to continue to be successful for ourselves and for the state. We've done a number of things beside the research that Eric and I will tell you about. We've become a nationally recognized model for innovative collaboration amongst research institutions. In addition to the research that we've done, and we've expanded that beyond our original teams, we've opened a joint office of business development so that we can use our discoveries together to attract new businesses to Minnesota and to establish new businesses in Minnesota. We've developed partnerships with other members of the community, including the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota, with IBM, with the Hormel Institute, and a number of other organizations in greater Minnesota. We've jointly sponsored a major clinical research conference last year at the Minneapolis Convention Center. We'll do that again this year. And as I've said, we've had a lot of recognition on the national scene.
This slide shows you the artist's conception of the addition to our Stabile building on the Mayo campus that was funded with state funds. The top section there above that gray line was all proposed. This building is now complete, and as Dr. Paller said, we had a formal opening for that late last month. That's providing the partnership with some additional space to allow us to expand our shared resources. Yep. It's helping to optimize our interactions between the two institutions, and we're beginning to use it to attract new researchers and investors in partnership activities. Just to give you some of the highlights of what's been done with some of the support we've had so far, mm-hmm. that first round of funding, which involved only $2 million from the state, matched by $1 million from Mayo and $1 million from the University of Minnesota, did result in some major advancements in Alzheimer's disease, prostate cancer, cardiovascular disease, and obesity. So those are the four projects we funded with that. From that initial investment, we've published 44 high-profile research papers, seen three patent applications move forward, and received a total of five extramural research grants, including an $8 million NIH grant. So that's already a significant return on the initial $2 million state investment. The other research projects are still in progress, but just to give you an idea of the enthusiasm on the two campuses, our call for proposals for the second round of funding, for which we had $15 million available, stimulated requests from our joint research communities totaling over $70 million. So the competitive nature of this funding continues to be very strong, and that exemplifies the level of research that can be brought forward to help Minnesota's health economy. And the third round of funding, which was appropriated last year, is now being allocated in a number of different areas, more research projects, some support for equipment and the tools of this modern science that we're trying to promote. We're initiating some joint recruitment proposals, bringing people on to help provide us with the additional talent it takes to be competitive in this arena. And importantly, we're also beginning to put some dollars into commercialization activities coming from that first round of funding a couple of years ago. Of course, Minnesota is not the only place that has recognized opportunity in the biosciences. This map, every place there's a dot, and it's not an inclusive map. There are about 41 states who now have bioscience initiatives. Highlighted with some dollar amounts are initiatives that have been discussed in Florida, $510 million to move a Scripps clinic to the East Coast to match the one on the West Coast, a $3 billion stem cell initiative in California, a $750 million proposal from Wisconsin, and Minnesota's own Mark Udoff went to Texas and put forth a $2.5 billion plan to stimulate the bioscience economy down there.
So the next step that we're here to discuss and request is a commitment for long-term success of the partnership, which would be $15 million recurring. And we propose to use these funds in the same way we've used the funds before, to invest in targeted research projects by teams of researchers to do work that can't be done at either institution alone, to continue to update our infrastructure, meaning the equipment that we use for our research so that our scientists continue to stay on the leading edge of technology and continue to be competitive for themselves and for the state. Importantly, to continue our efforts to commercialize these discoveries, which will continue to be more and more important as the initial research matures and we take the next steps. And importantly, as a final step in a way of solidifying our efforts and really developing not only the critical mass of people working together, but also the staying power of the partnership, is we're recruiting scientists to both institutions to add to the expertise we have. And these are people that are coming because they're excited about the partnership. They're willing to work amongst the two institutions. They don't have previous loyalties because they're going to be recruited with the understanding that they'll be based either in Rochester or in Minnesota, but they'll be expected to work with scientists at both institutions. And we think that this is really a key thing for the long-term success of the partnership and the efforts of the partnership. So the recurring funds are important because without them, we're really not able to plan. What we experienced in the last biennium is that we were successful in the first year. We had a $15 million allocation, and then everything stopped because we really weren't sure whether we'd get any more money from the state ever again. And so we had, as Eric said, we have $70 million of peer-reviewed research that we could have funded, and we only had $15 million. And we told everybody, well, let's wait and see what happens next year, next biennium. And everything was put on hold. We certainly, at that point in time, were not in a position to start the recruitment efforts because we need to be sure that people that we're enticing to come to our institutions understand that there is a long-term commitment to the partnership, not only by the institutions, but also by the state. Most importantly, we're not working in a vacuum, and the other states that are our competitors have equally important bioscience initiatives, and we don't need to be as big as them in dollar amounts because we've already shown that with the modest amounts of money that the state has trusted to us, we've had wonderful returns. So we don't need $2.5 billion a year, but we certainly need some kind of commitment so that we're on the map, so to speak. And again, I spoke about infrastructure investment, which is very important because we need to be able to continue to update our capacities, much as we've been able to do with the initial funding. So what's next for Minnesota? Really, the dream and the possibility is top-level science, world-class potential. We have the momentum. There's clearly the interest amongst everyone in the legislature, amongst the communities. And the real question is, where do we want to go? And we hope that this is part of where we want to go. We're going to stop our presentation here, and if you want to ask us questions, we're certainly happy to answer. But we will point out that we have a website that has a treasure trove of information about the past history of the partnership. There's detailed information about all of the projects we've invested in so far for anybody or their constituents who want to have additional information about the individual research projects. So thank you very much.
Let me just announce there is a quorum present. How does the Senator Cohn has a legislation in last year for this bioscience stuff, biotechnology? $50 million a year. Are you familiar with that? Does that intertwine any way with this, or are we in competition, or you know what I'm talking about? Or maybe some of the bonding committee members can remember that discussion, but Senator Scoia?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not on the committee, but I think Senator Langseth's proposal was for building buildings on the university.
Or campuses. Yes,
campus,
I think you're right.
For biosciences, one a year for
5 years.
Five years or something like that.
Maybe that's okay.
Mr. Chairman, there are several related. The one is the Biomedical Research Facilities Authority, which is to build five buildings or four more buildings, which is, again, up before the legislature this year. And that's for the university, although in that proposed legislation is the possibility that the partnership can use those facilities. And so that's relevant, but it's separate. There is also, though, in the Senate in previous years, a resolution that was passed in the Senate several years ago to continue funding for the partnership for a total of $75 million over 5 years. That did not come with any funding in it, but that was a previous one that I believe Senator Cohn and Senator Kelly were the co-sponsors of that.
Thank you. That helps me to sort this through. But well, this is a really exciting stuff. I mean, you just have to got a very friendly committee here, but the next one is where the money's at. So, and I'm sure Senator Tomasoni is a friendly chair, but Senator Lance.
Chair Metzen, if I may, it is really exciting. I hope that you can sense our enthusiasm and energy that we bring to you today. And as I think about the things that can truly move Minnesota forward, I think that this project, this partnership, is indicative of an economic tool that is truly good for the entire state of Minnesota and really speaks to those innovative and collaborative efforts. So, again, we appreciate the opportunity.
Senator Latz first, and then Senator Scheidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this is a terrific proposal. I attended the Biosciences Conference, which went through a lot of this. And one question I asked as we saw all of the other states that are putting billions of dollars into their biosciences programs, I asked where was that money coming from? Because here we're looking at, frankly, a small fraction of in comparison to what other states are doing. And the answer I received is that in most of the other states, their seed money for their biosciences program came from their tobacco settlements.
No.
Which, of course, we no
we
longer.
We spent ours in different ways.
We spent ours to close the budget in 2003. So
that's where the money came. That's good. Good.
You just got to keep smoking.
Senator Scheidt, did he ask your question?
Chairman, well, I was going to make the same point. Really? No, it's
great
all
lines.
Well, I guess we're looking for a motion to. Senator Scheidt?
Since I don't need to ask my question, I'll move that. 76 be recommended to pass and referred to finance, right?
Goes to finance first and then down to, yeah. On that motion, any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, is this for the Mayo Foundation on the Range? Is that what this is?
There's a branch branch office in Chisholm.
Chairman,
Mayo North.
Senator Tomasoni, perhaps we can talk afterwards.
Right. Well, we've got a Mayo in Scottsdale. Mayo in Jacksonville also.
The only Mayo we have on the range is mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise. Oh. All right, let's vote. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, folks. Very good. Very good.
That's right.
We're going to continue on with Senate File 238, Senator Sharon's Freedom to Breathe Act bill. We've got two or four or five proponents yet to go. We ran out of time, and if these five witnesses talk for a little while, that would even it up, so to speak, proponents, if that's agreeable. There's been 10 or 12, 14 people asking to get on the agenda, but I quite frankly don't think we're going to open it up again. I've tried to be very fair, and if we open that up, we won't get our work done. So we're not going to do that. So I'm sorry to those that would like to talk again today, but I think we can. holy Christ. So that's what we're going to do. Everybody's heart started pounding again. So we're going to, Senator Sharon, we're going to start with Charles Sinclair from the Tavern League, Fabulous Ferns, and welcome to the committee, Charles, and you may proceed. Everybody that testifies, just identify yourself for the tape. So.
Thank you, Senator Mattson, and Senators, Senator Sharon. My name is Charles Sinclair, and I'm a managing partner of Fabulous Ferns Bar and Grill at 400 Selby Avenue in St. Paul. Also co-founder, past president of the Selby Area Business Association, former member of the City of St. Paul Small Business Task Force, and a member of the Minnesota Tavern League. Over a year ago, debating smoking ban statistics with a smoking ban proponent at the Hennepin County debates, I was taken back by a statement that the accuracy and credibility of the information, this is what this individual told me, didn't really matter because the end justified the means. In other words, lies, exaggerations, a platform where selective evidence is organized to prove a policy rather than objective evidence is an acceptable approach if it stops tobacco use. Anything goes. Sitting here Monday listening to some of the points made by the smoking ban advocates, I wanted to just touch on a couple points before I got really into my own personal situation and how the smoking ban has affected me. A sampling of the troubling approach of the end justifies the means. I think in committee testimony Monday it was said that between $1.6 and $2 billion in smoking-related health costs were presented to the state of Minnesota caused by tobacco. An estimate, a certified document exists from Minnesota Department of Commissioner Kevin Goodnow that number actually is $294.4 million, quite a bit of difference between $1.6 billion and $2. Another point that was made Monday is the ongoing Helena, Montana, the Helena, Montana point of the reduction of 40 to 60% reduction in heart attacks over a 6-month study period. That actual reduction in heart attacks was 11 down to 7 heart attacks in the small community. That same phenomena occurred 3 years earlier, with no smoking ban in place, but was ignored by smoking ban statisticians. Also, we talked about Ireland and the national smoking bans in some European countries. Instead of the successful integration of smoking bans and a reduction of tobacco consumption, both Norway and Ireland showed increases in tobacco consumption and a major decrease in hospitality revenue after their first year of a strict smoking ban. In fact, Ireland dropped the hospitality in Ireland. Their loss is estimated at 17%, and tobacco consumption in Ireland increased 4.5% for the nation. Finally, I'd like to point out that 14 states with statewide smoking bans have enacted or are in the process of enacting exemptions to their statewide smoking bans to try to soften the economic shock the smoking bans have brought to their state hospitality industries. Bad science leads to bad legislation, and the proponents of smoking bans have built their argument on internally funded bad science, blatant lies, and gross exaggerations. Their end, which is actually the eradication of tobacco, not the reduction of secondhand smoke, but the eradication of tobacco use justifies any means that they can organize or fabricate. I'd like to speak to my own personal situation, and my partner Dan Dahleen is in the audience. 16 years ago, myself and Dan took our life savings, countless hours of hard work, and all the energy we could muster and built a small business called Fabulous Ferns. It was our own slice of the American dream. We got a great deal on a restaurant in a very undesirable location in St. Paul. In fact, our location on Selby Avenue in 1991 was the worst crime grid in St. Paul, the epicenter for drug dealing, muggings, prostitution, just the worst area in St. Paul. My mother, to this day, 16 years later, won't drive her car down to Selby Avenue, just based on the old Selby Avenue and her vision of it. We took this distressed property and turned it into a catalyst for the Selby Avenue Renaissance, easily St. Paul's most successful urban renewal. The catalyst for this inner city miracle, and to a great extent part of the glue that still holds our local community and our neighborhood together, is a small independent neighborhood restaurant with good food and great service called Ferns. Ferns Restaurant has been smoke-free in the restaurant area for 7 years. We also took trans fats off our menu 2.5 years ago. We know our market. We respond to our guests' desires. Before any government direction, Dan and I invested $13,000 in 5 Honeywell commercial air filtration units to clean up the indoor air in the bar area. We had very positive feedback from our customers regarding the quality air that followed this effort, and our bar business increased approximately 3%. We thought this was a smart move, and our sales increase more than compensated us for the investment. Shortly after that, Ramsey County enacted their smoking ban, and we took out a bank loan, which we're still paying on, and invested $53,000 in separating our bar area from our restaurant area and added more exhaust ventilation per the Ramsey County specification. Again, our customers' comments were very positive, and our food business improved about 2%. This effort would naturally take longer to pay off, but we were still in business, and our guests were happy. Plus, they realized we were trying to make things better. I mean, we were not holding back. We were spending the money. We were trying to do the best job we could. 7 months into our one-year Ramsey County smoking ban exemption, the city of St. Paul enacted their strict smoking ban, and we spent another $7,000 to outfit our outdoor patio with heaters and noise suppression material, as the activity of customers smoking outdoors became an immediate noise problem for residents in the area and an immediate problem for our landlord, Ted Glasserwood. Even with our outdoor smoking area, our business dropped approximately 14%, and to this date shows no sign of recovery. I personally know many former customers who are no longer frequent our restaurant or bar. They've taken their cigarette tobacco habit at home, and they no longer, you know, even though they're apologetic about it, the business just doesn't fit their personal activity. They take their cigarettes and go home. I also know many of my peers in the St. Paul and Minneapolis hospitality community that have suffered declines in business of the magnitude of 20 to 40%. And are losing or have lost their businesses and their own little personal American dream. We had at Ferns a 15-year history of increasing sales from 3 to 5% every year. In 2006, we dropped 14%, and this drop in business has jeopardized the very survival of our business. The smoking ban has forced us to lay off 6 part-time employees to date. We've reduced hours for our kitchen staff, servers, and bartenders. I've had 2 employees drop out of area colleges because they can't make ends meet with their reduced income. We at Ferns have stopped donating to 81 different charities that we gave to prior to the ban. And they are listed on our website, and they include the American Lung Association and all the standard charities that are out there soliciting donations daily. We canceled this year our annual holiday party. We reduced our holiday bonuses to management personnel. We've had one of our operations manager quit just because he can't see a future in the business. He thinks that, you know, the business in St. Paul, he just doesn't want to be in the hospitality business. We have not hired anyone to take his place. Instead, we spread his responsibilities over the existing managers, and I picked up 3 shifts a week closing myself. We just can't afford to bring anybody on board. But Ferns is really the small picture. It's an important picture to me, but it's a microcosm of what's really happening. The big picture is even more dismal. The fact that our whole industry and thousands of jobs are being jeopardized by a group of really zealots whose goal is admirable. I think people, you know, smoking is not a good thing. Their goal is admirable, but their methodology is flawed. The flaw in the anti-smoking lobby approach is that anti-smoking promotion, propaganda, and smoking bans only increase the awareness of young people to the kind of mystical, rebellious, and cool world of cigarette smoking. When an anti-smoking group can spend $1.2 million on a 30-second Super Bowl commercial, a lot of young adults are impressed, but not the way the sponsors of that commercial would have anticipated. A study released in Melbourne, Australia, published September 29th of this year, of 2006, stated that after a 2-year national study of the effects of smoking bans and anti-smoking propaganda, researchers found, and I quote, rather than keeping Aussie teens away from smoking, a rebellion effect among 18 to 24-year-olds may actually be prompting them to pick up the habit, unquote. Currently in our country, 44.6% of young adults between the ages of 18 and 25 years old smoke. This doesn't sound like anybody's winning the war against tobacco. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And it stunned me, really, when I looked that figure up and thought 44.6% of young adults 18 to 25 are smokers. I wonder if giant tobacco, the devil-like entity, is actually spending millions of dollars fighting smoking bans, or do they realize that the anti-smoking lobby's efforts are their best marketing vehicle? And are they just letting the antis go? I mean, are they just letting the antis do their thing?
Charlie.
Am I taking too long?
Yeah.
Just about done.
Yes.
Okay. in a question.
We've got a few more witnesses, yes.
Okay. Well, I thank you for the opportunity, and I hate to go on, but it's really important to us. It doesn't work. It's proven time and time again it doesn't work, and we shouldn't be the collateral damage for a war against tobacco. We should rethink the war and deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next witness is Doc Smith, a ventilation expert, HVAC.
My name's Doc Smith. This is my son, Justin Smith. And I was here on Monday, and I was at the house, I think it was last week sometime. And what I'm passing out is a discussion. Why I have my son here is Monday night, as I was going to the Midway Y, him and I had a discussion. I was trying to figure out how I could communicate to laymen how mechanical systems work and how smoking and how smokers and non-smokers could live together and show a demonstration. And what you see at the bottom picture, and my son has asthma, both my sons, and I don't smoke. And what we talked about is how to do it, and he said, well, how about a fish tank? And we kept on brainstorming and said, how about a gerbil cage? And what we did on the gerbil cage, you can see in the very bottom, I have a blow-up, is he took... He uses this fan for cooling down in the summertime. So we got this out of the garage, and what we did is you can see the two pictures. We had one where we have the exhaust here. Space, you could call it another part of the barn or the restaurant. And what I'm pointing to is that when we, this is a little smoker. What it is it's a Halloween smoke thing that you put in front of the porch and you blow. What we did is we blew the smoke into here, and we put a fan up here. And when the smoke came in here and exhausted through here, then this area stayed clean, correct? And then what we did is we moved it and put the fan here, blew it in here, and you can see even in this simple case that the one half of the room stayed clean of smoke and the smoke went this way. And what what you can see is that... Okay. What you can see, you had just a discussion just 10 minutes ago about bio building down in Rochester. And, you know, you're looking at microorganisms that you're having to filter. And you know, you have hospitals, research rooms, computer rooms, things like that we do all the time. Yeah, you know, I'm a designer and a builder, and I deal with both mechanical electrical systems, build Honeywell computer building. But the point is that you can supply air down low, vent air up above. You can add pressure right here. So you can pressurize one part of a restaurant and bar. And pressurizing it, you're pushing air from one part of the building to the other and exhaust through here. I don't know if you want us to demonstrate it, but the point is that you have, as Minnesota, I grew up. You want a demonstration?
Yeah, demonstration.
Okay.
This is kind of a foggy place.
Steam or something.
Yeah, it's okay. There's elements of heat up. This boy wants to show. Pressure's hot. Have a heart. Yeah.
Put a camera. Take a picture of the camera. We'll find
it. That's right. That's right.
Oh, yeah. He's here. Get a picture of this and send it to the kid. He'll have it forever.
Yeah.
Doc, what would you do without your helper here?
I had to take this away from him on Monday night because he kept on wanting to play with it. So, you got it turned on, son?
Hopes it works.
It takes a little bit of time to heat up. Is it ready? All right. Okay. Which would you like
it to blow? Just whatever way you want to show it.
Okay. We'll do the first in coming out the top here.
A
What are we trying to do now?
You will see that he's going to blow some of the fog into the space. It's not ready. But what it'll do is it'll draw the air in, or the smoke, and it'll exhaust out the top here. And this little room, even though it's higher, will not get fogged up. And then the other way we showed is, while we're waiting, is put it over this small room, and you will see that the smoke will stay on this side, and this side will stay clean. And what we're trying to show is that a simple son's toy at 11 years old can make, that if we can make this work, that we can make mechanical systems work. Yeah, in fact, it's an opportunity, I think, for Minnesota to be the forefront of this country to show that you can do displacement ventilation. What displacement ventilation is, adding air to the bottom and venting air to the top. This room here on Monday, as I was sitting here for 3 hours, everybody was getting hot. Something to consider in the future is right now how this room is ventilated is if you look around the top here, you have diffusers that dump air on the top. And your return air in this space is where? It's outside in the hall. Okay? So what happens is this would be a bad bar because everything gets mixed. And in fact, it's not very healthy for everybody sitting here for 3 hours because all you're really doing is breathing your own air. I had the same situation if you look at the house, and I talked to a couple of the house people. I have dyslexia, so I don't remember proper language, so I apologize for that. But talking to one of the ladies there, and I was showing her space too. Same thing. They had a supply on the top. Their return was right in the middle. So how can you have the ability to vent? You got it now?
Senator Skoy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, he's right, and this technology has been around. When I was redoing our house, we added a air exchange system to the house, and they put the exhaust up in the high part of the kitchen, and then they pressurized the rest areas of the house so that when you have steam in your kitchen, it doesn't travel out into the other parts of the house. I mean, what he's saying is accurate. The technology is available, and people are using it in building currently to manage air inside buildings, and you do have a slight static pressure in your house, so when you open or close the door, you can feel that.
Yeah.
And that's part of what building people are doing now. So, and what he's saying is accurate, and it actually is in use.
I think we're ready. Oh, that's a little bit too much, son.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is a non-smoking room on the other side over there?
You could.
Yeah, it's clear.
Is it?
You know, you want a little bit again? So you can see the smoke coming across. Do you want to do a little, just a little jump? Yeah. But you can see even that. Most of it's over here, but when we do a little control, it comes across. Now, if we do it here, okay, go ahead. And this stayed clean. You want to try this again, but not so much?
I hope he uses it.
So you can see the direction of the air going. And that's not, you know, if I wanted to add, usually in systems you have supply air that there's a motor on that side, but we don't have two motors. So if you supply, you know, if we blew on that end, it'd even have a more likelihood of having that air go the right direction. So, and what I guess what I'm proposing is to adjust it so that, you know, bars and restaurants can, you know, you still have either non-smoking, smoking areas, but like in this example, you supply air on the one end, pressurize the one end, negative pressure the other area, so all the air goes from right to left. And what I'm saying is not necessarily reclaiming it. You can vent it, and then what you do is you reclaim the heat. So you're not losing anything. Also, if you look on the web page, on web pages, they talk about green buildings. In some sense, what you're doing is you're increasing, giving the ability for a green building. Because why? You're adding air to the floor. In cooling situations, you want the cooling to be low anyways. So when you add air to the top in cooling, then you're trying to cool the whole room. So you're being more efficient. Minnesota, you're saving money that way. Also, during the heating season, you add air to the floor, heat rises. So you're not trying to force the air down. So by adding air to the ground and exhausting right away, the smoke can be pulled away right away or can be pressurized so the air always stays to one area. So you can zone areas so that it's – I tried to work this with Mancini's on West 7th, where he has three different spaces where he could have – two restaurants, and then a bar. So you can see in this situation, where he's doing a little again, that you can do it, even in a simple situation like this.
Okay, any questions of Doc Smith here at this time? Senator Letts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You introduced Mr. Smith as an expert in ventilation, but just inquiring what your qualifications are specifically, and your name is Doc Smith, but are you a doctor, I guess?
Well, the name
Senator
Doc Smith
Lance,
is...
Senator, I just read off the script. I don't know if he's an expert. It says he's an expert, so...
Well, they put that on there. My background on Doc Smith, my grandfather... I'm named after my grandfather. He was a doctor in education. He passed away about 15 years ago. I was called Little Doc when I was a little tyke. And in his memory, I kept that name. So it's Earl Doc Smith or Earl Smith. I'm an professional engineer, certified in the state of Minnesota. I kind of consider myself more of a generalist. I design and build small buildings, but I also oversee I'm an oddball in the sense that I'm an engineer and a contractor. I build it, I design spaces, and then I build it. I have a patent in expansion joints and in the process of putting, I have a patent pending on proper installation of windows. And I'm an advocate. I've sent notes to Anderson Window, Pella, and Marvin of the improper installation. So why I'm saying a generalist is because I know how all systems work, electrical, mechanical. And why is that? Because I worked for Honeywell for 3.5 years in their corporate headquarters doing design spaces, computer spaces, and things like that.
Senator Letts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Smith, is there any difference in the particulate content between the fog that you have generated here and cigarette smoke?
Oh, yeah, there is. But what we're trying to show is a demonstration that even in this situation, you can direct air, you can accommodate. This costs, this fan costs maybe $10. The smoker costs $20, and we're talking about 15,000, 30,000 systems that where you can filter air. You can easily look on a web page under bio, and they'll give you the chart on exactly what the sizes of smoke is to. I deal with asbestos, removal of asbestos. Asbestos, you have to look under a microscope to see the asbestosis or asbestos particles. And we take care of that when we moved asbestos out of schools and, as many places as we could. And kids were able to go back into those schools. So it's not – I guess why we're showing this is it is a simple system, and you can make it simple. It's not rocket science. You can vent a space. Now, there's an argument that people say that you can't filter it. Well, you can use that argument and say that, but you can put 100% ventilation in there. California does that in schools right now. So it's not something that you can't do, if they're concerned about recirculating it and not filtering it. But you can filter it too.
Mr. Chairman.
Blatz.
Mr. Smith, so it sounds like you're in the business of installing these kind of systems.
I've been in the business of installing and designing some systems. Restaurants, small little restaurant called Mesa Pizza right on Dinkytown. So just finished that project.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Smith, it sounds like you at least have some pecuniary interest. You stand to make some money if bars and others are exempt from a smoking ban. Am I understanding it correctly?
I guess I didn't look at it that way. If it does, great. What it really came down to, I have dyslexia. Okay, I fought all my life to get through college. I graduated in Purdue University. And when I was in high school at South High in Minneapolis, I asked for some help, and they said my grades were too good. Sorry. So I had to work my butt off to get through college. I graduated in 80, and I was lucky and fortunate that I had a couple of professors that said, I was failing a class one time, and he said, I'll tell you what, I'll lock you in my office, and you take your test, take it as long as you want. I got a 98 out of 100. So I know how people can be persecuted or have handicaps and not necessarily have the opportunity. And I guess I look at smokers are 20% of this, I hear 20%. And my concern is that we have the systems to be able to filter air. Why not accept it? And why not give us the opportunity to filter air so that we have a better airspace for people in restaurants and bars, and then future in schools. Then we don't have flu in the winter. Why do we have flu in the winter? Because we're locked into the space. You look at your look in your space right here. You look, your flags aren't even moving. There's hardly any airflow in this room. And you think it's healthy for all of us to sit here for three hours?
Especially now with the fog.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
There, lads.
Mr. Smith, if your conclusion is that ventilation is so effective, can you explain why the United States Surgeon General has stated in their report that no ventilation system is adequate to protect individuals in a room from secondhand smoke?
I guess the way I've thought about that is, why am I the only one engineer here talking? And why am I called the, I don't know, what is that? Like I said, I'm not dyslexic. You know, the cigarettes with a round circle on it, what are those called? What brand is that? I don't know what it is. But
Lucky
Red
Strike.
Circle?
Lucky Strike.
What's the company? But I called the company that supplies cigarettes to see if they had any research. They didn't want to touch it. They said, I don't even want to talk to you. So I think it's politically incorrect for me to be here. When I talked to my son last night about it, I said, when you go to school, you're going to have kids that are going to jump all over you because you're showing and demonstrating a situation that you can take care of secondhand smoke.
So, Mr. Smith, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it sounds like your answer is that the U.S. Surgeon General's report was politically motivated and is not based on science.
Well, and that maybe not based on science properly. And like I said, in this room, if you did the test here, you'd fail because it's not vented properly.
Okay, let me ask you one other question, if I might, Mr. Chairman. What are people breathing between the time that the cigarette smoke enters the air and the time it gets vented out of the room?
You're breathing the air that's coming out from your feet. So what happens is that you're supplying air down towards the ground, and you're venting, so the air rises. So right as somebody exhales, the air is going to rise to your ventilation.
So if I walked into a room where people were smoking but where the system was operating, I wouldn't smell any cigarette smoke?
No. It would come up and vent it. If you had properly designed where you add air to the floor and you vent it to the ceiling, you're pulling the air up. So everything is getting pulled up directly.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was in our American Legion in St. Louis Park about a week and a half ago, and they've got a ventilation system at the ceiling. And I can tell you there are people smoking in the room, and I was smelling it.
Okay, so. But where did they supply the air?
I don't know how they had the system set up, but everyone who was there was smoking right along with the smokers.
That's my issue is that, yeah, I bet you if you go back in there, you'll see that the diffusers are in the ceiling instead of on the floor.
Sure.
Okay, I think we're going to.
Okay.
Any more questions of Doc?
I think we're going to move on.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank Doc for coming in because we're hearing these reports that there's no ventilation whatsoever that can take the smoke out of the air, and he's done it with a toy, proved it with a toy that there is, and it can be done, and I think it puts the Surgeon General's report in a lot of credibility problems. I mean, I listed 56 instances in the report of there being questions as to what the report was saying, and 58 of another question on reports. Actual findings in the report, and this might be one of them. I mean, you would think if you can land on the moon, you can figure out how to vent the bar, and it looks to me like this guy knows how to vent the bar, and the technology is available, but nobody's looking at what the real possibilities are, and people smoke cigarettes and don't die, and yet we're worried about the secondhand smoke that in just bars, because quite frankly, every place else in the state, you can't smoke anywhere else in the state except for bars and restaurants, and it's even getting to the point where I'm worried you're not going to be able to smoke outdoors. But anyway, I want to thank you for bringing that in and pointing out that there are HVAC systems available that could actually work.
Well, and I want to point out one thing, too, on that is any time that I design a building or even construct a building or remodel, each time you have to look at that situation individually, and you design the space for the situation. So how can you have a carte blanche statement that it can't work? Because you look at each system individually. That's why you have microbiology rooms where you set up the system to take out organisms that are even smaller than smoke particles that are deadlier. So it can be done and not really expensive either.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Smith, I just wanted to know your son's name.
Oh, Justin Smith.
Justin, thank you for coming today. It was very interesting. Did you have fun doing it?
Are you a registered lobbyist, Justin?
And thank you for letting
All right,
him thank come
you.
With that.
Take down your equipment there, and we're going to move on.
Yep. I
didn't get one. I wondered why you got some.
Next, witnesses for the proponents. I don't see the Mancini's here, but Mr. O'Gara, did you, Dan, wish to come forward? Mr. and Mrs. Dan O'Gara?
And we wait to couple of seconds here. Okay, Mr. and Mrs. O'Gara, welcome to the committee, and you may proceed.
Thank you,
Dan,
Mr. Chairman.
Identify yourself for the tape there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dan O'Gara. This is my wife, Chris O'Gara. We are the owner-operators of O'Gara's Bar and Grill at 164 North Snelling Avenue in St. Paul. Why don't you start?
Thank you. The non-smoking advocate said that our sales may increase if we were smoke-free. We certainly have not experienced that. Before the ban, our sales were steadily increasing. Business was good. Since the ban, our sales reflect the same sales we had in 1997. It set us back 10 years. Even with our price increases. And obviously, our costs are not the same as they were 10 years ago. Ironically, our food sales since the ban are flat, even with price increases. Some of the examples of the effect of the smoking ban, some groups that we used to have. We used to have an investment club, a group of 20 to 30 men who met monthly at O'Gara's. They've been meeting at O'Gara's for over 15 years. And we could always count on them to increase our sales for the night. Unfortunately, they also like to smoke. Since the ban, they took their business elsewhere. In early 2006, I took a call from a company in Minneapolis who was looking for a place to hold their holiday party. They've held it in Minneapolis in the past, but they were now specifically looking for a place where they could smoke. They had a $6,000 budget, which is huge for us. We don't see those types of parties too often. We took the party, they had the party, everything went great. Since then, the smoking ban went into effect. I asked them where they would have their party once the ban was into effect, and they said they would again look for a place where they could smoke. I haven't heard from them this year. I don't know of any groups that have started coming to O'Gara's on a regular basis because we were smoke-free. We received a letter from a woman formerly from St. Paul who was coming into St. Paul to visit some friends. Her friends were smokers. She went where they wanted to go. So in her letter, she said she suggested coming to O'Gara's. They found out we were smoke-free. They went elsewhere. People are bringing their business to other places. I'm asking you to let the people decide in what type of environment or in what type of bar or restaurant, where they want to spend their money, a smoking bar, non-smoking bar, or where they choose to work. Let's make it right for the customers, business owners, and employees. Thank you.
Danny.
I'm here today to talk briefly on the talk about the 50-50 option that Ramsey County has and how well it worked for us in St. Paul when we had it. As many of you know, we were under the 50-50 Ramsey County law until the city of St. Paul passed a total ban almost a year ago. Under the 50-50, there was not one restaurant that closed due to the 50-50. It's proven that the more liquor sales you have, the more impacted you are by a smoking ban. When people go into a restaurant, they go there to eat. The restaurant wants them to turn the table. They want them to finish eating so they can turn the table. That's how they make their money. In a bar situation or nightclub situation, people are there for an extended period of time, and they're there to be entertained, whether it be a sporting event on TV to see a band or just the camaraderie and talk to their friends and the bartender. After not quite 1 year of the total ban, eight bars have closed, and dozens of others are struggling to keep their employees, stay in business, or sell their business for retirement. Under the 50-50, around 80% of the restaurants were smoke-free in St. Paul. That's a lot of places to eat, drink, and work in a smoke-free environment. I think that a total ban is not a cure-all. We've found our regular customers are still coming in as often, but instead of watching an entire Twins game, having a burger and a couple of beers, they'll come in, they'll stay for two innings, and they, as soon as they feel that urge to have a cigarette, they go home. Since the ban, something that I didn't anticipate was our lunch business to drop so dramatically. We had groups of two, four, six people that would come in 5 days a week. A few of the groups we still see two to three times a month, but many of those groups we just have not seen since the smoking ban. And in those groups, there may have been one or two of the four or six people that smoked. So we're losing the non-smokers as well as the smokers. In O'Gara's Garage, for 22 years, we've booked the best local music and some national acts. Business is so bad that we're trying to reinvent our concept. 2 weeks ago, we met with our booking agent and told him to book out the whole year with our five largest drawing bands, and the other nights we would go dark or try to book private parties. This means that some of our employees, the very people that you're trying to protect, are going to lose their hours, and some of them are going to lose their jobs. A few of them already have. There will not be that opportunity to help and develop new bands that are trying to make a name for themselves. We've had to cut back way back on our charitable donations. The donations that we are still doing, we've cut the amount of the donations in half. Contrary to popular belief, bar owners are good people that live and work in their community. We are proud people that give back to our community through donations and fundraisers. We are small business people that employ a lot of people that work their way through school, raise their kids, or a part-time job to make ends meet. 50-50 with preemption is a good and fair compromise for both sides. It allows the freedom for people that don't like smoke to eat, drink, and work in smoke-free environment, and the people that do smoke and their friends to go to a place where they can enjoy the freedoms that they like. I'd like to briefly just touch on the patio situation, we have a patio outside our entrance off the parking lot, and through the city of St. Paul, several meetings, and the city was trying to do the right thing and get the building code folks, the health folks, and everybody in one room so you didn't have to go to different departments. We've gone back three times and finally have come up with something that we can do to cover our patio, but 50% of the walls have to be open. Something that might be an option would be to let us enclose our patios, like something like a 3 or 4 season porch, and just smokers go out there. Not necessarily even have the employees go out there, but it would be some place that we could, in inclement weather in the state of Minnesota, a day like today, that the people that smoke, that are our customers, have somewhere that's comfortable to have a cigarette, and then they could come back into the bar. But I really believe that the 50-50 is a good and fair compromise. Thank you for your time.
How did that work in Ramsey County? They had a 50-50, and you thought you had a deal, then what?
Ramsey County still has the 50-50, and when Ramsey County passed the 50-50.
St. Paul, I guess I'm talking about.
Yep, the county passed a 50-50, and the mayor vetoed the legislation in the city of St. Paul, so the city of St. Paul did not take action, which means that the city fell under the county law. Then a year later, they passed a total ban in the city of St. Paul.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter what side of the issue you're on, but it was kind of too bad that a lot of bars put in 150,000 in dividing up the areas there. And then,
well, the rules keep changing, and that's why
the rules changed. I mean, I bet.
The rules change, and that's one of the things that I think that a law that affects this many places and this many people, that preemption should be an option. Our industry is a regulated industry, and preemption on 0.08 and the drinking age. I mean, there's already a precedent set for preemption. So I think that if there's a 50-50 statewide with preemption, so everybody has the same law, there you won't have those border battles.
All right, any questions of Mr. O'Gara, Senator Bach?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. O'Gara, does O'Gara's bar have a charitable gambling?
We do. The Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association Children's Fund is our charity.
Do we have any idea what the impact to the charitable gambling receipts have been over the last year since the smoking ban?
Actually, I believe Colin Meinhardt is going to come up from our charity, and he'll touch on the charities, the state charities.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Latz?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. O'Gara, do you have any idea how many bars and restaurants have opened in St. Paul since the total ban took effect?
I don't. I could get that information from licensing and forward it to the committee.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Senator, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The O'Garas. Colin Meinhardt, Main Street Grill.
Mr. Chairman, may I inquire as to your plans here? I'm just kind of keeping my eye on the watch, and we spent about an hour so far
we're a little
of the issue.
Senator Latz makes a good point. I think we've been pretty generous here to the proponents, and I didn't. One of the things I try to always do is to be as fair as I can be, and that's a good point. But I think Colin's going to make it short, and then we're going to do some voting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Colin Meinhardt. I own and operate the Main Street Grill in Alden, Minnesota. My wife was here to testify with me, as Danny's wife was here, but she couldn't make it today because my sweetie is working. It's Valentine's Day. And to all those senators wearing red today, I'm sorry, I'm not in shape, but I will be going home to work with my sweetie tonight. But she did want me to read this.
Did she tune in? I mean, you call her sweetie about 5 times.
Oh.
I hope she's watching or will.
I do too, Senator.
If not, I don't know
if she can make it.
If not, take the tape back home. Okay, sweetie, you may.
The letter from Sue is, my name is Sue Meinhardt. I own and operate the Main Street Grill in South Central Minnesota, town of Alden, population 650, which is next to Albert Lee. My business serves both food and drinks. I do not sell cigarettes, and I never will. But I am in the hospitality business, and I want to be hospitable to everyone. Cigarette smokers are not second-class citizens, and I will not treat them that way. Doing business in a county with a shrinking population base is not easy. A total smoking ban will not bring me new customers. Rather, it will drive them to the new Iowa casino 15 miles south of Albert Lea. I have devoted over 20 years of my working life to creating and growing this business in the hopes that I could put my kids through college. My son Michael is a junior at the University of Minnesota, and my daughter Melissa will enter the university this fall without racking up $100,000 in student loans. Please don't destroy my dream of building my business that will be something of value that would provide for my retirement. Please consider very carefully the effect of a law that could harm many little businesses like mine. I need to be able to welcome all people into my business. Thank you, Sue Meinhardt. Just a couple observations. I won't belabor the point. I know everybody understands what's going on with the smoking ban. And one thing, I also work with the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. I also wear a hat as a gambling manager because there just isn't enough to go in the business to make it a goal for everybody. And I also serve at the American Beverage Licensees, which is a national board, a trade association representing bars, liquor stores, restaurants throughout the country. So I've had discussions throughout this nation with other places that have had smoking bans. You know, and here we are, the first real cold weather state that's really dealing with this issue. And in all these states in California, they don't have total bans. They have partial bans. They have exceptions. They have exemptions. They have preemption. There's all – now you sound like Jesse Jackson. Well, that's scary.
It's okay.
With all the exemptions. But the thing, you know, different things that we heard about that Charles touched on today, you know, as figures always get thrown out by the other side, if a tobacco company funds a report, it's automatically dismissed. You know, if they fund one, it's got to be fact. I just want to let you know at the MLBA, we take no tobacco money. This is strictly a small business issue, and we want to keep it that way because we're not here fighting for big tobacco. We're here fighting for mom and pop that's out in Wilmer, Minnesota, and Winona, and Worthington, and the rest of this great state that we live in. And so the collateral damage has been mentioned before, and that's some of the things we want to point out. I'm also a charitable gambling manager. I can tell you, Senator Brock, at Mancini's, immediately, the very first month the smoking ban took effect at Mancini's, our sales went down two-thirds from a gross figure of $66,000 down to $22,000. The very first month. I also have sales in O'Gara, which is a machine site, and it is kind of different than Mancini's because Mancini's is more of a measure where they have a booth site and quite a bit of activity in there. And they've saw that the charities in St. Paul, I just got a letter from the Boy Scouts the other day asking for a contribution from the Children's Fund, and they were explaining that they couldn't understand why their donations have decreased so much recently. And I had to politely write a letter back of because of the smoking ban and the charities of the loss of revenue that's happened, especially in Minneapolis and St. Paul. But one thing about that, they always talk about smoking bans and your business is going to go up. In a county with a shrinking population base, we don't have new customers. But when I was out in San Diego, they told me in 1995 they had 1,200 bars in the greater San Diego area. Now, you know, 12 years later, after a smoking ban, they have 347 bars in that area. And that's a warm weather state where people can go out onto the patio, and they do have exceptions out there. But I worry about wages that will be lowered and jobs lost in this great state because you can't afford to pay your – I can't pay my cook what he deserves to get paid now, and I sure don't want to go ask him to take a wage cut. But I tell you one thing, MLBA is ready to compromise. We're here at the table. We'd sure like to talk about this smoking ban without having a full ban for everybody because we're here to do business and pay taxes in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Colin. Any questions, Senator Lantz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meinhardt, thank you for taking the time to come in and testify today. Do you pay health insurance for your employees?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, no, I do not pay health insurance because I don't even come close to making that revenue that I would love to be able to do that, but no, I don't.
There, lads.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meinhardt, I'm not sure what the industry standard is and among your membership, but I know that in Minnesota, by statute, the health insurers are not allowed to discriminate in their premium rates between covering smokers and covering non-smokers. Do you believe that, at least for the portions of your industry that do pay health insurance benefits for their employees, that those bars and restaurants would be willing to pay a higher insurance premium for their employees that get health insurance benefits because of their exposure to secondhand smoke in the establishments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, I think that we would be able to, we would do that just as soon as the state of Minnesota would step up and pay the difference in health insurance premiums that they pay for all their state employees versus the ones that they don't. So, I mean, you're coming and trying to single us out in private business without taking care of your own house first, and I don't think you want to go there.
Well,
wait a minute. Senator
Latz. Fear to tread, Mr. Chairman. I do have one other question as well, and we didn't get a chance to inquire of King Wilson when he was here last Monday because of the shortage of time about the charitable gambling stuff. But since Mr. Meinhardt is speaking in part on that behalf, I'd like to inquire. Mr. Wilson indicated that there is about $1.3 billion in gross receipts in the charitable gambling industry. Of that, about he said $64 million gets distributed to charities, which is about 5% of all the receipts, and about $50 million goes to taxes, which is about 4% of all the receipts. Now, setting aside the question of if individuals are willing to actually make their donations directly to charities, the charities would get $1.3 billion instead of just $64 million. Isn't there maybe a better way to get charitable contributions to deserving organizations? Or is charitable gambling really more of a business operation for the establishments that allow it?
Mr. Chairman?
Answer this one, then we're going to move on.
Senator Latz, I don't think you quite understand the totality of charitable gambling in Minnesota and what it all evolves with. I mean, the big number is a grossing number, but about 80% of that money is paid out to players in prizes. As they receive money, they invest a dollar, and there are prizes to be paid out. So that is taken out of that figure also. So there may be other ways, but this is the sociability of it, of the people that give to charity. People don't always just want to willfully give. They want to go out and have a chance in the game. And Minnesota is a unique state in that area. But I can also, Senator Latz, I do know that Mr. Barrett from the Gambling Control Board is in the room and could probably give you more information than I could on charitable gaming.
I don't think we need. Yes, about 78 to 82% is paid out, and then 9% is taken somewhere else. Then you get a couple of bucks for the manager, and you get a little something for the cleanup crew, and a couple other things. So it's not this or that. It's not, you know. But anyway. Senator Sparks, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, I'll be real brief because I know we have some amendments we need to get down here. First of all, I just want to thank Mr. Meinhardt. He was here Monday and drove all the way from Alden and agreed to come back today, so thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Senator.
Great job. They have good burgers. I know he's got to get back to his sweetie. But I think we really need to kind of focus again on the jurisdiction of this committee, and we're focusing on business and jobs in this committee. And I think the other day, you know, we listened to a lot of testimony that businesses weren't affected. And I believe that certainly in the area that I represent, a border community, we've seen a little background on some of the convenience stores saw some real reduction in their gross rates when that health impact fee went into effect a couple years ago. And the simple reason for that is we live 10 to 15 miles away from the Iowa border. So there's several people that are willing to drive 10 or 15 miles to save that $10 a carton. And so I'm certain that they will continue to do that. We're sitting next to the tax chair, and obviously that has an implication. Senator Murphy's not here, and I've seen it firsthand that a lot of those folks, while they're down there, too, gas is a little bit cheaper, so we'll put a little gas in here, too. But I think this is the real world. And the other day we were talking about a level playing field, and I know that Senator Scoy kind of touched on it. And the author of the bill even said that this bill doesn't refer to Iowa or Wisconsin or North and South Dakota. But for us senators that represent border communities, it is a concern, because I think that if those people are willing to drive across state lines to buy those cigarettes, they certainly will leave that, too. A lot of our local cities and counties haven't been able to pass an ordinance, and when I asked them why, the simple fact was because when we had those hearings, truck stop owners, bars, and restaurants came and said, hey, this is really going to hurt our bottom line. And so I think we really have to focus on this committee on how it affects business and jobs. A real-world story, again, similar to Colin's comments, a private owner purchased a bar in southern Minnesota, installed a brand-new exhaust system recently for $6,000, invested over 100% of his purchase price into remodeling this year. He's 6 miles from the Iowa border and 8 miles away from the new Diamond Joe Casino. Now, I know we don't want to go back to the gaming discussion that we had the other day, but I think it's a real issue. In Minnesota, over 70% of those people that are going to that Diamond Joe Casino are from Minnesota. And so I think we've seen it locally, too, that our charitable gambling are really suffering. And they do a lot of good things in rural Minnesota. You know, our rural volunteer fire departments depend on that, youth programs, and a lot of good local projects. So I know we need to move forward, but I would say that, again, the jurisdiction and what we should be focused on in this committee is how it affects businesses. And the supporters of this bill have said that secondhand smoke kills. But I say if we pass this bill in the form it is today, that, in my opinion, we could kill some business and jobs in the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Any further comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Tomasoni.
Since Mancini's didn't testify, I've been in contact with a woman by the name of Sheila Cromer, who is not only a bar owner but is a scientist. And I'm wondering if we can have a one-minute testifying to hear from her, because she
Senator has... Senator Tomasoni.
Interesting
insights. My dear friend, my roommate, seatmate. We're not going to open it up. And I know you'd be mad at me for a couple hours, but I sure will be friends in the morning. But if we start, proponents have had, like Senator Lantz or somebody mentioned, ample time to tell her.
Should I run now, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, we told that other guy. He just kept sitting there. You know. Hey, once you got the order, you get out of here. You know, move on. But I think we're going to entertain some. Senator Sharon, did you have a quick minute or two to wrap up?
I appreciate that, and I appreciate your recognition of the differential in the time in terms of testimony. So I know that there's been a number of things said here that people are focusing on that maybe we'll have some time to talk about it. But I just want to go back to the central point here that secondhand smoke causes very negative health hazards. That's the basis for which this legislation is coming forward. And that that the Surgeon General's report clearly indicates that there's no level of secondhand smoke that is safe. And furthermore, it states that there is no known ventilation system that is capable of removing not the smoke, not what you visualized here, but the particles that are the cancer-causing and coronary-causing problems. You cannot see it. It's like the particles of asbestos. And the other thing I want to draw your attention to is that the 2006 report by the Surgeon General is the most comprehensive report ever produced. So it isn't incidental, a study here or a study there or an anecdotal story here or an anecdotal story here, there, with one side saying, gee, this was good for me, and this side saying this was bad for me. It's a comprehensive review of many, many, many studies over a 20-year period of time, and not just by one scientist, but by 40 scientists, and then again by another 40 scientists, and then again by another 30 scientists. So this is a comprehensive report, and it is important for us as senators to turn to trusted sources of scientific information, like the National Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, the American American Medical Association, that's where it is, for the quality and reliable resource, because they just don't take their here's a study or there's a study. They look at comprehensive study, and they look at it for its validity and for its bias. And you've been provided with information about the cost of secondhand smoke to the healthcare delivery system and to the families who lose family members. And you've heard information that the Surgeon General speaks that there's Senator Tomasoni was talking about in the report the number of references to insufficient data to show causal effect. There's a number of type 2 items in that report. There are four levels, 1, 2, 3, 4. One and two are very high levels, and number one is very hard to achieve. It's a direct causal relationship, and that exists, and I have a list of the ones that are listed as causal relationship that I can share with you. You've talked about gambling proceeds. I'll pass that by. I know that there's also some hope. We all have this hope. I approached this with a hope that there was maybe a way that you could ventilate. But, again, the scientists who have taken a look over a long period of time in several studies are saying that there's no level of no system, no filtering system, no air exchange system. There is no ventilation system. These are not people producing the product that that can remove the particles that are the source of concern and what are the source of the healthcare risk. And I also have a list of producers of ventilation systems, a long list that have indicated that they will not make a commitment that they can remove those particles. So I just want to draw you back to that. In addition, there is a comprehensive study that was presented to you. I want to remind you of this last time on the economic impact on jobs, on revenues. And I'm not here to say that there isn't going to be anecdotal or situational places where people will have some difficulty. But the overall research that's done, the comprehensive look, shows that people are really doing fairly well with in those places where these ordinances exist. Not that there aren't anecdotal stories that you've heard here today of people having some difficulties. So I just want to bring you back to that set of scientific information and comprehensive research rather than simply focusing on anecdotal stories. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Good amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A4 amendment.
Report. You can start explaining your amendment, Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we have a provision in law, and I don't believe this committee has done an overview on the Workforce Development Fund and the things that are funded out of it. But we have a payroll tax in this state that employers pay. And one of the things that that Workforce Development Fund pays for is a program called the State's Dislocated Worker Program. And the way the program is used under current law is where there is a plant closing, people become eligible for some dislocated worker assistance. The other place that it's used is where there is a substantial layoff, and in law that's defined as 50 or more employees at one location over a 30-day period of time, that those people become eligible for the state's dislocated worker program. And the program provides for an additional set of benefits for people who are displaced. And what this amendment does is provides for individuals that are lose their jobs because of this state mandate an opportunity to participate in that benefit set that we provide under the dislocated worker program. Even though it's not going to be at one location, it is going to be in kind of one hospitality industry. And as we eliminate jobs across communities, the cumulative impact in the state is likely to be, I mean, could be significant. And so I think if we're going to pass something like this, we owe it to those employees who are going to lose their jobs some opportunity to get some retraining. And the kind of things that the local workforce centers provide for people that qualify for dislocated worker training are, and this is right out of statute, job or career counseling, testing, assessment of skills and aptitudes, relocation assistance, job development, counseling assistance, enabling people to participate in employment training with the goal of gaining new employment.
things like resume writing, a number of skill improvements that when people in this industry lose their jobs, they're going to have to go back and likely get their skills retooled. And I think if I'm going to vote for this bill, I just want to make sure that if people lose their jobs as a result of what we do, we at least ought to reach out to them and make sure that we make every effort we can to make sure they get the kind of education, the kind of help that they need from our workforce centers so that they then have a better opportunity to go land another job down the road. And it's difficult in some communities. In some communities, you know, in rural Minnesota, there probably isn't a job down the road. And that's why one of the provisions in here is some relocation assistance potentially for people. A little probably easier for people to obtain a new job in a lot of communities, certainly around St. Paul. One of the eight bars that Mr. Ogara mentioned closed, people probably had an opportunity within some kind of a commutable distance maybe to take their existing skill set and probably go find some other employment. But in a lot of communities, there isn't a job down the road, and people really need some assistance in making sure they retool their skills. Sorry to say, we've seen a great deal of this in Range communities recently with the closing of some of our mines. And some people have an occupation they like, and they make a career out of it, and someday it goes away. And they need an opportunity to get their skills improved so that they then can provide for the needs of our family. Mr. Chairman, I think it would be a great improvement to this bill if I think the least we can do for those people is make sure they're eligible for all the additional training that we can provide them at our local workforce centers. So.
Okay. There will be no additional funds. It will be out of the existing dislocated workers fund.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the dislocated worker fund always has a carry-forward balance in it, and the legislature appropriates money out of the fund. So I don't think it will cause the payroll tax to go up. So I don't think...
I think that's already pretty well funded.
And there's some flexibility in the way that the payroll tax operates. It actually moves around some depending on what this legislature does, but it moves within a range. But I do believe there's adequate money in the fund.
Well, the reason I'm asking the question, Senator Sharon's already been to two committees, and I guess she wouldn't want another... stop along the way.
Mr. Chairman, I just say that I don't think that would cause the tax committee to have to see it, and that's certainly not my intent because it may affect the payroll tax. But I am concerned tax wise, but I think it's pretty hard to put a number on that, so I'm not going to ask for it. But
Senator,
I do think that Senator Tomasoni probably needs to see it because I do think Deed or somebody will have to figure out. Get their arms around some kind of a number of how many people might be eligible so that the legislature appropriates the right amount of money from the Workforce Development Fund to make sure that we provide for the training that people need. I don't have a clue. And maybe Deed won't be able to figure it out either, but I think we should probably give Deed some time to try and figure out how many people might lose their jobs as a result of this state mandate and make sure that there's adequate money at the workforce centers to address that. So, members, I'd appreciate your support for the A4 amendment. I think we're going to move forward with this. There's going to be some impact, and I don't think any of us in here can deny that some people are going to probably lose their employment. And if they don't have the skills, we should try help them get them so that they can continue to provide for the needs of themselves and their families.
All right. Senator Bonif. Excuse me, before that, Senator Michelle had his hand up first. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess for Senator Bach I'd start by saying I do disagree with Senator Bach's premise about job loss. I don't think that's clear. As a matter of fact, I think the testimony that we've heard is that a statewide policy can actually have some benefit to business. I say that as someone from the suburbs who, in a very patch quilt kind of way, have started to pass these smoking bans. And so actually the Ogaras testimony was a great example of that. You know, depending on who the mayor of St. Paul is, the smoking policy changed. And then Ramsey County jumped in. You know, we can't just keep ping-ponging these establishments between levels of government. So I do support Senator Sharon's bill. And I guess the specific question I have for this amendment is, how are we to know if someone has lost their job, and I'll quote from the amendment, in whole or in part to the provisions of this act?
Well, Senator Box.
Mr. Chairman, if I can help, having been around the construction industry for most of my life, when a person loses their employment, before you can go file an unemployment claim, you have to answer a question on the form that says the reason for your separation. So an individual is going to have been told something by the employer as to why they've been terminated, and the employer has an opportunity to then gets a notice that the individual has filed for unemployment and has an opportunity to contest whether that person is eligible for unemployment or not. So I think if a person is displaced because the bar or restaurant simply doesn't have the volume they used to have, I think employers will be honest. They'll want to make sure that the needs of their former employee, that they'll be qualified for unemployment, so they'll put a reason on there. You have to do that or you can't receive unemployment. And to your point, Senator Michelle, maybe overall statewide, maybe there's not a whole lot of impact, but certainly in some communities, depending on their geographic location or their proximity to other facilities that, you know, may continue to allow smoking indoors, there's going to be some impacts in some communities because there are different circumstances there. And I think Senator Sparks makes a very good point. There'll be some impact along the Iowa border. I'm sure there will. And I think all of us know that in some areas there's going to be an impact. And I think where there is, we got to make sure those people have every opportunity to get some additional training. And I hope nobody ever uses it. And I hope recently this fall we lost three plants on the Iron Range that were in the wood products business, hundreds and hundreds of layoffs. And the governor and then Commissioner Ward Innes, who was at Deed, came to the range and announced that we're going to make people eligible for the dislocated worker training program. And I hope that never happens in my district again. Because I don't want dislocated worker training, and I don't think most of our employees in this state want it. Nobody wants it. But some people need it. And we were going to have individuals in some communities that need it. And their employers have been paying into this fund through their payroll tax. Why shouldn't we allow those employees whose employers have been paying into the fund an opportunity to get the training? And if the employer cites some other reason other than the fact that they have lack of work for them, and it's not related to this, then I guess they won't be eligible. But if the employer cites that that's the reason they were laid off, the employer's been paying into the fund. His employees should be eligible for the funding.
Okay, I don't think we know that. Senator Boniff, did you wish to?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bach, I appreciate your suggestion, and I would like to take care of those workers that this does affect in that way, and really had compassion for those people who are concerned about their futures. I support Senator Sharon's bill, and the concern I would have is voting for that amendment, and I'd want to vote for that amendment, is the part that you added at the end about that you'd like it to then go to Senator Tomasoni's committee and have no offense, Senator Tomasoni, but have, you know, the deed department do an estimate. I don't see how they could very accurately come up with that number because we really don't know. This is brand new for all of us, and I'm concerned that then it goes to Senator Tomasoni's committee, and now we get the whole group of people against the bill, people for the bill, and pretty soon, you know, this bill doesn't look the same way it looked in this. And so I have concern over keeping control over the shape of this bill because I'm a supporter of the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Boniff, I think the issue is every committee chair should keep the testimony in their committee to what's pertinent to their committee. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if the local impact note comes back and says that aren't local communities, there's a big impact to this, and I know a local impact note has been requested. It's required under law that a local impact note be requested on what the impact in local communities is going to be. That should be arriving shortly. And there is a big tax impact in that local fiscal note. I think the tax committee will want to see the bill, and I think we all should want them to see the bill. I don't see a reason to see it today, but, and I think if Senator Tomasoni keeps the testimony in his committee to the issue of the dislocated worker fund, which I'm sure he will, committees should, I don't think, should change provisions in bills when a committee that had jurisdiction over something dealt with an issue like jobs. I don't think the next committee should review that. That's what this committee is for. Senator Tomasoni's committee is to deal with the dislocated worker fund. My committee is about taxes. And if this bill was coming to the tax committee, I can tell you what, we wouldn't have a whole bunch of people testifying about the Surgeon General's report or about ventilation. We'd be talking about taxes and what the impacts are. So I don't think, Senator Bonoff, that you slow things down any. I don't think you require the bill to get modified. I think the role of that committee is to look at their purview. And that's the way I've always experienced this place in the 13 years that I've been here, is committees are pretty good about not trying to undo work that was done in a previous committee under somebody else's jurisdiction.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Lentz, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bach, maybe you can address a question or two for me. I support the concept of allowing dislocated workers to get new training, and I think we should have an expanded system in Minnesota that allows that to happen as a general matter. I'm a bit concerned about this kind of a provision establishing a precedent for any time we make a change in a health regulation in Minnesota or any other kind of business regulation in Minnesota, then the corollary would be we need to make sure the dislocated workers program is there to account for any impact that might have on businesses throughout the state. So what here might look like a relatively small fiscal impact on the dislocated workers program might turn out to be, as a matter of precedent, a very massive impact on that program. I'm a bit worried about that. The other thing I'm really worried about is the issue that Senator Michelle raised, which was basically a causation one. This is a very high turnover industry. People, bartend and waitress and waiter during college, and then they leave college, but they might well have a real incentive here to go make an application for additional training if they want, or whatever reason they decide to quit the job or leave the job or get fired from the job and decide this is an opportunity. And then you get into a whole administrative proceeding. Is it really or isn't it really the reason why? I'm afraid it opens up a whole can of worms beyond just the narrow focus that you're intending with this, which I don't have a problem with. So for the reasons that I stated, I think I'm, as much as I resist having to say this,
all right,
I'd have to oppose the amendment.
Senator Sharon, did you wish to either way or?
I think that the issues of concern, I share the concern about how you might find a system to help any mitigate any negative impacts. Maybe it can be dealt with separately from this bill in the overall process of dealing with displaced workers.
Okay, we got seven more amendments. Senator Thomas. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Latch, you made the point why Senator Bach's amendment should pass, and that is because we don't know what the impact is going to be. And if it is a massive impact on the Dislocated Workers Fund, that means it's going to be a massive impact on our workforce, and we are going to need a Dislocated Workers Fund to take care of these people and to get them into the next job. And I think we're looking at a situation here where we have absolutely no idea what the effect this bill is going to be on our on our industry that we're trying to affect here. And I quite frankly think that one of the things that we need to do, and that we've always done in the past in the legislative process, is to make sure that we get it right before we pass it and not be in a hurry to pass it because of the fact that somebody thinks that an amendment here or a committee there might slow it down. We have till May 21st to pass this, and if it passes, I want to make sure we get it right.
All right, all those in favor of the Bach A4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails.
The other amendment, Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I have a A-17 amendment. I got it here. So
you can start explaining the amendment even before the members get it.
Mr. Chairman, the A-17 amendment is just it's an impact study to charitable gambling request, and it's a no-cost amendment. And what this does is it just says that the Gambling Control Board, in cooperation with the Commissioner of Revenue, shall create an advisory task force to study the impact of the statewide smoking ban in public places on lawful gambling. And I think we heard enough testimony about what's going on as far as charitable gambling is concerned and how the receipts are going down. In some instances, we're actually seeing where the charitable organizations are going to be owing money as opposed to being able to have any money to pay. And so since this is a no-cost impact study commission, I think it makes sense to find out exactly what we're doing to the charitable gambling business by eliminating the smoking in bars.
Well, I probably shouldn't editorialize, but I might or will.
I might and I will.
This might be a good idea, but then this might have to go to the gambling committee then, too. So I just thought I'd bring that up. I mean, we're going to have all these stops, and
well,
did she actually ask for it? Yeah, they Senator Russ's committee asked for it. Hey, you can make an argument, Senator Bach, that it's
to that point. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I don't see an effective date for the bill, so maybe counsel can help me. But you know, I don't quite understand the rush to this. I mean, there's not an effective date, which I think means this, and counsel can correct me if I'm wrong. This bill would go into effect on August 1st. So why we don't make sure we have adequate review by the committees that have jurisdiction when it doesn't go into effect? I mean, if it said day following the enactment, I would understand maybe some people want to try to drive this forward, but maybe counsel can tell me the effective date of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, you're correct. August 1st, 2007.
Did you give an answer? I was,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
I don't oppose this amendment. I think it's fine to do the study, but I would note that there's plenty of evidence that charitable gambling has been declining across Minnesota for a number of years, independent of any smoking bans. In Hennepin County, it's been declining for years beforehand, and I've got data from a lot of cities where they've gone smoke-free and charitable gambling has increased. So I don't think we can simply assume that the data that's been presented here, when you've got all sorts of additional competition for the gambling dollars from casinos, internet gambling, and Canterbury, I don't think we can assume that a smoking ban is the reason why there's been some decline in charitable gambling revenues in other parts of the state.
You know, three more amendments, and this will be at every committee in the Minnesota Senate. All right, on this amendment, I think we all know what it does, and maybe that's all right.
May I just speak to the amendment as the author? I really want to emphasize what's being said, that that this amendment to this piece of legislation, I think, is questionable, because what is impacting gambling in the state of Minnesota is substantially there are much more substantial impacts on gambling proceeds than this particular piece of legislation. So it's interesting that this concern would come in relationship to this and not in relationship to the number of other, including internet gambling, that's affecting gambling proceeds.
I heard that Faye just said she's
Mr. Chair, I think the study will make that clear, if it is impacting it or not. And if Senator Latz is right, then it will make it clear that the smoking ban isn't impacting the charitable gambling, if that's true. But that's what this study is intended to find out, because you heard from witnesses already that Mancini's charitable receipts have dropped by 2/3 in just the first month of the smoking ban. And so if it's not related to the smoking ban, I'm certain this task force will be able to determine it.
Senator Saltzman.
So on an earlier point, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Bach, we've talked about that when these bills go to different committees that we should be talking about the things that impact that committee. And we talked about jobs here today. And if it goes to economic development, we're going to talk about that. But our committee, I don't think, is talking about gambling. So to me, this amendment, if Senator Ress wants to see this bill, would she have the ability to request it?
Oh, sure. She did.
Yeah, she does. She, did.
So
she can ask for it, yep.
So I guess maybe it's her choice then for us to make that decision today.
She must have been aware of this amendment because we got a note 15 minutes ago that she wants to hear it. So. Okay. Any further questions on it? How do these things move so fast? But anyway. On the Thomas O'Neill amendment on the charitable gambling impact study, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bach.
Can I just have to set the record straight on something that I said, because I aired on Monday when we met, and I don't want anybody to question my integrity, but I did say that I don't smoke. And somebody reminded me that from time to time on the golf course or maybe when I'm on a fishing trip, I might have a cigar. And that would be accurate. I erred, Mr. Chairman. I've never smoked a cigarette, but from time to time I do smoke a cigar. So anybody that was at all thinking that I lied, I want to set the record straight. It is just an omission on my part.
We should vote on whether we accept his apology. Senator Scoid, do you have a cigar once in a while?
Yeah, you know, that had happened in an earlier part of my life. I can't have any smoke anymore. I have the A-15 amendment, Mr. Chair.
We'll pass it out. You can start explaining it before we get it.
Mr. Chair and members, the A-15 amendment makes the penalties the same for the owner of the bar as for the smoker. It makes them both a petty misdemeanor. Currently, the person that is really committing the crime, the smoker, is a petty misdemeanor, and the owner of the bar is a misdemeanor. And I think that if anything, we should be a little cognizant of the difficulties that the owner of the bar has and make the penalties the same.
Discussion on the Scoy Amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Neville.
So this will prevent the bill from going to the Crime Committee, I guess, right? So we're actually saving that. But here's my point is this. I asked some questions at the last hearing on whether this bill was prohibitory or regulatory. If you adopt this amendment, it is clearly regulatory, not prohibitory. And we will clearly be making it impossible to stop smoking in the casinos. So I do think if that matters to you, you would want to oppose this amendment.
Well, sure. Mr. Chair, that certainly has not been my intention, and I hadn't considered that aspect. I just think it's unreasonable to have such a significant penalty under the bar owner, but that is not my intention, and so if that is the case, I would withdraw the amendment.
I'm not so sure. Senate Counsel, briefly, do you think that's the case? You indicated to me that...
Mr. Chairman, members, I did speak with some experts on Indian law, and the level of the penalty, it's highly unlikely that it would affect whether or not the state has authority to prohibit smoking on an Indian reservation.
So then you'd probably want to...
So then I would continue on.
You would continue on with your amendment, I would think.
Yes, if it doesn't affect the relationship with regard to the casinos in the state, then I would like to continue on.
Okay, on the penalty... Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a good reason why there was a discrepancy in the penalty provisions in the proposal, in the bill, and that is, the onus should certainly be on the bar owner to keep a compliance with state law, simply having to pay a $125 petty misdemeanor citation on the occasion when they might get turned in is going to have very little disincentive on the bar owners. They can fit that into a large gross revenue every year as simply a cost of doing business, and they can do a wink and a nod, and that's the end of their enforcement efforts. So really, to put any teeth into the enforcement effort in this bill, it's different than when you're trying to enforce something on an individual actor. But when you're trying to enforce it on a business establishment, I think you need to have a little more teeth to it, and not just a pinprick dollar penalty like a petty misdemeanor would be.
Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, I take a more optimistic view of our bar owners and residents. I think that if it's the law, they will try to comply. Listening to the testimony from the bar owners, they're going to be struggling with a number of this initiative if it passes financially. And to be honest, it's not their responsibility to enforce the state law. It is their responsibility to operate a good facility, be hospitable, and be within compliance of the state law. But the person that's doing the smoking is the one that's primarily responsible for the law being broken, and I think the penalty should be the same.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator, you. Yeah, how are you?
I'm not Day.
Senator Day.
Thank you.
Senator Deville.
Thank you. I agree with what Senator Scoy just said, and frankly, with the discrepancy between misdemeanor and petty misdemeanor, we're putting the onus on the wrong person and setting up a situation where proprietors can just bet on all sorts of conflict, and it would be very tough to enforce. But rather than do it this way, we should make it a misdemeanor for the smoker. Rather than making it a petty for both, we should increase the penalty for the person who's violating law, especially if we think this is a public health hazard, which I don't, by the way. I don't think that secondhand smoke is a public, and we're all dancing around that issue. It's not a public health hazard, in my view. I reject some of these opinions. They've been politicized. But we're not the health committee, so if we're going to move forward on the other side of it, I oppose the amendment because I think it's going the wrong way. It should be misdemeanor for both.
Senator Michelle, then we're going to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I disagree with my friend, Senator Day Neville here, but I wonder if Senator Sharon, the author of the bill, has an opinion on this particular amendment.
Senator Sharon.
Well, I think Senator Latz already spoke to what the reasoning was behind this. I think the language in the bill, in order for that penalty to occur, you'd have to demonstrate that they knowingly failed, and it's not that there would be smoking in the establishment. It was that the person made arrangements for smoking, allowed ashtrays, those kinds of things that would demonstrate in some way that they knowingly engaged in behavior that was in violation with this law. It's not intended that if somebody is a smoker that they're going to have to pay the consequence. They can at that time ask the person to leave, and if they refuse to leave, then the next step that's asked of the proprietor is to use the procedure that would be used for any disorderly conduct.
On the Scoy amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I request a roll call on this amendment.
Will be a roll call. Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, you're talking about the language in here. If you go to page 4, line 27, you're talking about shall handle the situation consistent with lawful methods for handling other persons acting in a disorderly manner or as a trespasser. What are the definitions for those? Do we have that defined, and what does it mean? How is the owner going to know if he's handling situations consistent with a lawful method for handling other persons? And so I just think that we ought to go a little slower on this and make these penalties a little less and consistent between the smoker and the bar owner or the restaurant owner.
Secretary will take the roll on the Scoy amendment.
Metzen?
Aye.
Bach?
Yes.
Bonoff?
Yes.
Carlson?
Yes.
Day?
Gerlach?
Yes.
Gimsey?
Yes.
Koch?
Yes.
Latz?
No.
Michelle?
No.
Murphy?
Aye.
Neville?
No.
Rosen?
Yes.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Scheid?
Yes.
Skoy?
Yes.
Sparks?
Yes.
Tomasoni?
Yes.
Is that it?
Yep.
Okay, I've got 14 ayes and 3 nays. Is that correct? 14 ayes and 3 nays. The amendment is adopted. Further amendments. Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, I got an A-22 amendment.
A-42 is
it?
A-22. A-22 amendment. You can start explaining the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this is the amendment that allows smoking in bars that have at least 50% of their total net sales from food and beverages after taxes. This is allowing places to have smoking where most of their income is from alcohol. And we have a whole bunch of little bars out in rural Minnesota, on the borders, out in the country that don't serve food. And if they do, they serve just a little bit of it. And basically speaking, most of their income is from liquor. I think I've heard enough, I've seen enough in rural areas that if you eliminate the smoking business from some of these places, they will go out of business. And we've heard testimony that some businesses say that their sales have increased as a result of the smoke of not having smoking in their business. And I maintain that this will be a survival of the fittest type situation. There will be bars all over the state going out of the business, especially border bars, and other bars will gain business from it as a result because there won't be any place for a lot of these people to go. And for me, this is more about people being able to make a choice. People who go to these establishments who want to make a choice can make a choice. And people who own the establishment should be able to make the choice for their own establishment whether or not they should allow smoking or not allow smoking. And quite frankly, I think that's what the whole issue comes down to. I've spoken to waiters and waitresses who have told me that they've lost $100 a night in tips, that they chose to work there, and it was their choice to stay there if they wanted to. We've heard that 8 bars in St. Paul have closed. We've heard that Ferns has lost 14% of its business and made all kinds of expenditures to try and accommodate onerous laws. We've heard that the pull tab income has decreased at Mancini's. We've heard example after example after example of what the smoking ban has done to affect different types of these businesses. And I think at the very least we have to say that since alcohol is a big part of most of these businesses, revenues, that we at least, if you have more than 50%, you should be able to allow, you should be able to keep smoking. So I'll offer this amendment, Mr. Chairman.
On the amendment, Senator Platts.
Mr. Chairman, members, this would go a long way toward gutting the statewide smoking ban for a variety of reasons. One of the things that we've heard complaints about from business owners across the state is the patchwork, but not only the patchwork between jurisdictions, but the patchwork between types of business establishments. We can't sit here today and pretend that the bar, which is located right next door to the restaurant, is not competing with that restaurant just because they happen to have 51% of their net sales in alcohol rather than 49% of their net sales in alcohol. And frankly, you can't pretend that the VFW or American Legion across the street isn't competing with them either. Part of the problem that you've seen in some communities is that there are alternative places for business to migrate to. Now, that might be across the city line or the county line, or it might be 10 steps down the sidewalk to the next door. That is one of the biggest problems with this patchwork. And you know, you, you can't sit here and tell me, and no one's going to convince me anyway, that a worker in a bar is any less entitled to a healthy, safe working environment than a worker in a restaurant. Now, this is a real health issue, despite some claims that apparently the entire consensus in the scientific community is politicized. We heard a description about the Helena, Montana heart attack study being scientifically or statistically invalid, but there was another study in Pueblo, I believe that was in Colorado, where they had 399 heart attack patients admitted to two hospitals in the year and a half before the Pueblo, before the smoking ban went into effect. Afterwards, 291, a decrease of 27%, three times the sample size in Helena, Montana, a statistically significant change. And that's simply the heart attacks, just the presence of smoke in the environment. So there is a real clear link in the health hazards here. The charitable gambling issue is also, in my judgment, a non-starter. I've got a list here of cities that have allow smoking in their establishments, such as Oak Grove, that still saw a 61% decline in charitable gambling receipts. Montrose, a reduction of 44%. Rockford, 26%. Circle Pines, 33% reduction. Lakeville was down 6%, and Burnsville down 5%. I mean, charitable gambling is declining in this state for a lot of reasons unrelated to smoking ban. So we can't just point the finger here. This is a very significant change. And what's in, we heard the Restaurant Association from Minnesota sit here and tell us maybe they oppose the whole bill, but if you're going to do the whole bill, don't start exempting establishments that are competing directly against them. You can only have lunch once. You know, you fill your stomach with a hamburger, it doesn't matter whether it's at the bar or the restaurant at the VFW. And you really can't assume that the VFW is not, in fact, a bar open to the public, because, in fact, they are. Maybe that amendment is coming up next, but the principle is the same. I've got an email from Carlton County, a greater Minnesota county. I don't know if their population is declining or if it's increasing, but they voted 6-0 on their county board in favor of asking for a comprehensive smoke-free ordinance with no loopholes or exemptions. Mr. Chairman, the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce supports it statewide without exemptions as well. We've got the letters from the SEIU, the organized labor that's weighed in on this, and the hotel and restaurant employees union, HERE, that are also saying pass it statewide, pass it without exemptions. Mr. Chairman, this is a committee that I understand has jurisdiction over Minnesota OSHA. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, this committee's job, its charge, is not just to protect business and not just to protect jobs, but also to protect workers, to protect the safety and the health of workers. I would suggest we would be derelict in our duty if we ignored that in favor of certain types of establishment because they happen to sell more liquor than they do food. Mr. Chairman, if this amendment is going to be considered, then I would like to offer the A-20 amendment as an amendment to this amendment.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is really complicated, obviously, for a lot of people because I think most of us or many of us are planning to vote for this bill. I certainly am. But I am troubled by telling people we know what's better for them. We know how to make choices for them about where they will conduct their business, where they'll, how they'll conduct their business, and what business they'll, participate in, I can't think of the word, where they want to be a customer, where they want to eat, and where they want to drink. If what the proponents are saying is true, that business will increase if it's a smoke-free thing, then I say let people vote with their feet and let people go to the smoke-free place and let other people who do not want to you know, who want to smoke or who have friends who smoke and want to be with their friends, let them go to those establishments. Because if what they say is true, then people are going to choose the smoke-free environment, apparently. The business will get better if you have smoke-free environment. So I think that does this – so may I ask a question of whose amendment is it? Is it
– So it's a Thomasoni 822 amendment.
May I ask Senator Thomasoni, does this – or maybe I could ask Mr. Fuller, does this – affect the VFWs and American Legions then as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid, yes, it's a generic amendment.
Yeah, if they meet the way I understand it, the criteria of Subdivision 5, they would fit into this category also. Senator Latz, you had this amendment to the amendment that adds some 48-point type signage. Senator Latz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment would require that a proprietor of an establishment where smoking was allowed in there post a notice at the entrance to that establishment regarding the very serious negative health impact that would be present for anyone entering that establishment. Maybe doctors haven't been able to tell every one of their patients that they should not enter an environment that has secondhand smoke in it, but this would make sure that any patient or any person that has a heart condition would know that they are risking their life by entering such
okay,
an
I think
establishment.
It pretty well speaks for itself, Senator Thomasoni. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if Senator Latz could answer a question. I'm just wondering if this will be required to be placed above, below, or to the side of the signs that we already require about banning guns. Maybe it doesn't matter.
Mr. Chair.
Pretty soon we won't
Senator
be able to
Neville.
I'll oppose this amendment, but I just want to ask if there's anybody who does have an OSHA study that shows that secondhand smoke poses a health risk. Would you provide that study to me before the floor debate? It's my understanding that OSHA has conducted 14 studies on secondhand smoke in the workplace, and that none of them have found that there's any public health risk from secondhand smoke. If there is such a study, would somebody, maybe the author or someone else?
I don't know if we have the answer now, but we'll try to find that. Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, I'm a carpenter, not a printer, so I don't know what 48-point type is, and I might be the only one in the room that doesn't know, but is that an inch or 2 inch or
it's kind of big type, is it?
What size is 48-point? Help me.
It's pretty big.
Will it fit on a 3-foot door? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, I couldn't tell you exactly what 48-point type is, but I'm informed it's a 0.48 of an inch, so maybe about a half an inch. Maybe it's about the same.
If you're
size
over 50, you can read it.
Concealed carry,
yeah.
So you can
big enough.
You can read it, and no less of an impact as a concealed carry.
Senator Scoy, well, on the Chair. Size of the type. No, we're on the amendment to the.
Well, on
to
the size of the type, Mr. Chair, to Senator Latz, you know, you could have had bigger point type if you'd had a whole lot less words and just said smoking allowed. And you would have informed people that they were going into a facility that allowed smoking. And you might have actually gotten some support from some of the, well, from me, but not for this.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz, then we're going to vote.
You could put smoking allowed on a pack of cigarettes, too, and it's kind of self-evident, but cigarettes have a lot more information on there for a reason. If you walk into a bar where someone else is smoking, you're smoking right along with them. You should get the same kind of information. I ask for a roll call on this amendment, Mr. Chairman.
May I speak?
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I look at these two amendments and I think, okay, which direction are we going with this bill? And I am an author on this bill, and one of the reasons I did sign on to it, and I vacillated a long time on this bill, didn't I, Senator Sharon? It was very hard for me because I am a border legislator, and I do have issues with the with everybody flying across the border. But if we opened up gambling into Minnesota, maybe we wouldn't have everybody going to Diamond Joe's. But not that being said, the reason why, one of the reasons why I signed on to this bill is because of my children and some of the information that came back from that health impact fee, the cigarette tax, whatever you want to call it, back into committee saying that it really had an impact on the kids, on college students. They have this attitude that I'll quit when I graduate from high school, or I'll quit when I graduate from college. And they are starting to smoke in bars. And I know that I have two college students. They're not smoking, but they tell me what's going on. And if we can stop that habit, that easy access to the cigarettes in the bars and to that whole atmosphere, that whole environment, perhaps we can get a handle on this. And so Senator Latz and Senator Thomasoni, I'll be opposing both of these.
On the Bonif, or Senator Bonif, excuse me.
I don't have an amendment. Mr. Chair, thank you. I just want to agree with what Senator Rosen says, because that's why I'm for this amendment. I have kids in their 20s, and as soon as they turn 21, what they like to do is go to the bars, whether that's good or bad. That's just the way it is. And my son started smoking, and he was an athlete. And, I mean, it just shocked me. He thought it was very cool. He rolled his own. He does the cigars, the whole thing. And I emailed him, texted him yesterday in committee saying, what do you think about this? He says, it's going to be really hard on us, you know, but it's probably a good thing. And so I am concerned about our kids' futures. And I hope that we're going to vote on these two amendments separately. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, Senator Thomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I'm opposing the Latz Amendment as it's written also. I think Senator Scoie makes a very good point. If you would put smoking allowed here, this would be a good amendment. And it would actually, I think we actually heard bar owners say they'd be more than willing to do that on their walls outside their bars. So as it's written, I would oppose this amendment.
All right, Senator Sharon, and then we're going to vote.
I request a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
What will be a roll call on the amendment to the amendment?
Chairman Metzen, I would like to say that I have a couple of studies that I'd like to provide for those who are interested in the effectiveness of smoke-free laws reducing smoking among youth. I know that that is of interest to some of the members of the committee, and there is evidence to that effect. I think it's also important to note that, again, the American Cancer Society, a politically motivated group apparently, has been also demonstrating, among other reductions in smoking patterns when there are strong smoking bans, that people who do work in a smoking environment appears to encourage those occasional workers to pick up the habit of smoking. So I know that that's probably not the issue in front of this committee, so I'd like to speak to the amendment. And what I would like to say about that is that the worker, we have a long tradition with workers. The whole movement around labor was to ask, not to ask the worker to vote with their feet or the person in the environment to work to vote with their feet, but to require business environments to create healthy environments for the people who are there, who ask for the food, who drink out of the glasses. It is the obligation of the state of Minnesota to require public places that are used by the public to be safe. So it's not an issue of voting with your feet. And the other issue is that I don't hear in this discussion in a committee that is focusing on business in the interests of business about the impact of secondhand smoke on the cost of health care, which is an enormously huge driving force in what's creating difficulties in business today. And for anybody that is really serious about trying to drive down the cost of business and give business a chance to sustain themselves, they have to be taking a look at factors that reduce this significant increase in cost to health care delivery. And there's 80% of the public who are not smoking, who certainly are capable under the environments that they might be attracted to increase business in a place where business may be diminishing. I'm certainly hoping that this committee will not vote for this amendment that really takes and cuts the heart out of the
Sharon, which amendment?
Sharon, we're talking on the Latz Amendment at
not
this time.
Not the Latz Amendment. I'm not speaking to the Latz Amendment.
And
I know, but you should be.
Should be.
We're on the Latz Amendment. There will be a roll call.
But we should do the first one take first.
No, you don't. It's an amendment to the amendment.
Take the roll on the Latz Amendment.
Back.
To the Thomasoni Amendment, of course.
No.
Bonif?
Yes.
Carlson?
Yes.
Day? Gerlach?
No.
Gimsey?
No.
Koch?
No.
Latz?
Yes.
Michelle?
Yes.
Murphy? Neville.
No.
Rosen.
No.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Scheid.
No.
Skoy.
No.
Sparks.
No.
Tomasoni.
No.
Metzen.
No.
What do you got? There being 5 votes in favor and 12 against, the amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Now we're on the Tomasoni amendment. Further discussion on the Tomasoni amendment, Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, does your amendment still allow local governments to override this locally, or is this intended to be a preemptive statewide amendment?
Senator Tomasoni or Mr. Fuller?
I believe preemption is still in the bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Neville, that's a separate provision of the bill, and it's not that allows stronger local regulation.
Okay.
And so I don't know what the intent is, but the language does not undo that local authority.
Okay. So, Senator Tomasoni, is it your intent that this language would be applicable all around the state and it would preempt local control or not?
At this point in time, Senator Neville, that's not my intent.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Letts?
I'd like to offer the A18 amendment to Senator Tomasoni's amendment.
Explain the amendment, Senator Letts.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, this amendment would provide for a statutory cause of action that an employee that is injured as a result of exposure to the secondhand smoke in their place of employment may sue their employer for actual damages sustained as a result of the injury caused by the secondhand smoke, and as well for injunctive relief and for attorney's fees. If the employee can demonstrate that the employer knowingly endangered the health of employees, then the employee shall also be entitled to recover punitive damages.
All right, do we have before us the A18 Latz amendment to the Tomasoni amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I oppose this.
Further discussion on the Latz amendment to the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Neville.
This would have some significant impact on workers' comp laws, too.
Mm-hmm.
If a person does get, if they can prove that, well, actually, they don't even have to prove it. If they get sick and they can prove, all they got to prove is that it arises out of the employment relationship, they're compensated under workers' comp. So this would be a fairly major overriding of the workers' comp law, and don't think it would be a good idea.
On the Latz amendment to the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not permit.
A couple of votes more on the last one, I think.
we're back to the Tomasoni motion.
Mr. Chairman, I ask for a roll call on Senator Tomasoni's amendment.
Any further discussion? The Secretary will take the roll on the Tomasoni A22 amendment.
Bach.
Yes.
Bonoff.
No.
Carlson.
No.
Day. Gerlach.
Yes.
Gimsey.
No.
Koch.
Yes.
Latz.
No.
Michelle.
No.
Murphy.
Nay.
Neville.
No.
Rosen.
No.
Saltzman.
No.
Scheid.
Yes.
Skoy.
Yes.
Sparks.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
Yes.
Metzen.
Yes.
No, the opposite.
Okay, there being 8 ayes and 9 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion, Senator
Sparks.
Mr. Chair, I'll be brief since I do have the A23 amendment. I know we're short of time, so I can explain it a little bit. The other day, King Wilson talked a little bit about the effects on charitable gambling, the bingo halls, the four in St. Paul that were closed when the smoking ban was acted. This would simply exempt bingo halls, the 15 to 20 bingo halls statewide, Mr. Chair.
On the bingo hall amendment. How many bingo halls? Are there 18 or so in the state?
I believe 15 to 20 was a testimony.
Senator Latz, I bet you like this one.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thinking of the health of the workers in the bingo halls, I would oppose this amendment for the same reasons that, you know, this isn't a gambling issue. This is a worker safety issue, and frankly, the safety of the patrons at bingo halls as well. So,
all right, any further discussion on the bingo hall amendment?
I request a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
There'll be a roll call. The secretary will take the roll on the bingo amendment.
Bach?
Yes.
Bonoff?
No.
Carlson?
No.
T. Gerlach?
Yes.
Kimsey?
No.
Koch?
Yes.
Latz?
No.
Michelle?
No.
Murphy?
Nay.
Neville?
No.
Rosen?
Yes.
Saltzman?
No.
Scheid?
No.
Skoy?
No.
Sparks?
Yeah.
Tomasoni?
Yes.
Metzen?
Yes. I've got bingo.
Mr. Chair, they all vote.
He had 7 ayes and 10 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion on the bill?
Chairman, I have an A19 amendment. Mr.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, this one is allowing smoking in bars that put in HVAC ventilation systems, and it enumerates the 1 through 6, the percentage of sales starting on June 1st of 2009, and when the HVAC ventilation system needs to be installed, and it goes through June 1st of 2014, depending upon what the percentage of sales is. And this seems to be a very logical amendment, Mr. Chairman. We just saw today a demonstration of an HVAC system that will actually work. And we know that there's ventilating bars will work. And I quite frankly think that at some point in time, you got to give these people who work in bars the ability to own bars, the ability to make some decisions on their own as to whether or not they are going to have smoking in their bars, and the people that work there should be also be able to make decisions as to whether or not they want to work there. Members, this is about people being able to make choices, and we should allow people to make their own choices.
Let me just say there's 4 more amendments, and Senator Ress has got her whip out. Beat me, and I think we're going to have to. Thought we could get through this bill today, but apparently we're not going to. So we're going to, before we even address your amendment, we're going to have to adjourn, and we'll let everybody. We've got, our schedule is really getting filled up, but we'll let you know. And so anyway, we're going to adjourn the meeting at this point. The meeting's adjourned.
Well, another day.
I don't know. You got to hear people, don't you?
But it's high.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.